high graded, and there's still a lot of less desirable older growth there that's probably a lot stronger, a lot more established. And I don't see where those seedlings are going to be able to compete about with the established species there. I guess that's my concern. I've had scientists pass that concern on to me. Maybe they're off the mark. I don't know. It's just a question that has been brought to my attention about how this is going to work with the reforestation.
I may be misunderstanding your question. I don't think the 50% value added, though arguably, as Representative Davies suggested, it needs to be looked at, but I don't think it doesn't present any high grading concern to the best of my knowledge. For instance, if some firm did construct some kind of a panel plant, wafer board plant, whatever, using the low value hardwood, then they would be using the overmature aspen and birch and whatnot. If on the other hand someone decided that
that's allowed in the interior but not outside the interior. Outside the interior, I guess, is where the concern is.
Yeah. If on the other hand someone, let's say on the Haines State Forest, in Haines was going to use 1 million feet a year, and part of that was going to be sold as dried and surface construction lumber, but part of it was going to be used for cabinets or some kind of manufactured and whatnot. Certainly, even if it was 50% utility, that is 50% going to Ketchikan to the pulp mill, which would be very, very high utility on the Haines State Forest, that'd be certainly in the salvage sale category, still the bill would enable that. So I might be misunderstanding your question, but I really don't see that this presents a high grading situation. In some respects, somebody could say, well, without using the hardwood here in the interior and just using the spruce, someone might say, well, you're just using part of the resource. I have to tell you that over the decades, professional foresters have become humbled by deciding what's the highest value wood out there, and then 20 years later, the wood that they thought was a trash wood is somehow has developed to be the highest value wood in the forest.
I have one comment. Marty, you made a comment earlier about 5 million more feet.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Sorry. Can you hear me?
No, I can't indeed. Thank you.
You mentioned earlier that 5 million board feet is not enough, probably for a large business to get into.
Not necessarily.
I just want to make a comment. To get the remaining amount of timber from other sources, such as private land. I'm a private landowner, a shareholder, and believe me, you couldn't pay enough and still make lumber from that type. So I don't know where your other source would be. As you know, the export log and industry is very competitive to timber in this area. I agree with you. I think the value added is good, but we all have to be realistic also, stating that it is, we have competition out there. So I would hope that you would look at that a little bit longer and see where we could make sure that we're getting enough timber. I don't want to go and tell Al that we have all this timber here, and 5 million is it, but you'll have to get more timber from elsewhere. We're going through the same problem in Southeast right now, and we're shutting down mills. Are there any more questions from committee members? Representative Cott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a comment. Section 2, I'm a little bit troubled. Section 1, page 2. We're saying here in the findings of purpose that we're trying to provide the maximum extent possible opportunities for Alaskan jobs without significantly. That's what I trouble with that word. It seems like we're opening up potential litigation later on without significantly adversely impacting fish and wildlife. So what we're saying is that we can create jobs to the maximum extent possible with the understanding that we want something less than a significant adverse effect on fish and wildlife. I don't know, you know, what is something less than significant?
Money did we give that first maintenance budget? $30 million? What is it now? $30 million and the sound effect is on.
does yours work?
Yes, it does.
Okay, we'll get started again.
Okay. Representative Williams?
Yes.
A couple of things. I think we'd like to take another shot at Representative Bryce's concerns before we leave here, because I think perhaps there was something that needed to be said. I don't want to go into it until he's back, but I think we might be able to clarify a bit more.
Okay, could we get Representative Bryce back into the meeting room, please? Representative Cott? This one is working with. I forgot where we were right at before we were rudely interrupted. Yeah. I think we're just about done. They wanted to go over Representative Bryce's, restate your position on Representative Bryce's position.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bryce. Marty and I were talking, and your question about high grading, I just want to make it clear, and maybe I was missing the point. Our timber sales, when they're laid out, we don't, of course, allow an operator to go in and take what timber he or she might want and then leave. We designate what timber is to come. Sometimes it's a marked sale. Sometimes it's a diameter cut sale so that trees of a certain diameter are harvested. But we don't allow an operator to leave trees based on discretion, even if the operator was willing to pay for the trees and leave them, because of forest management considerations, oftentimes habitat considerations, then the trees that are designated to be removed are removed as per the bid, and the performance bond ensures that that will happen. And so a sale under House Bill 344 would be just like any other sale with respect to whether the timber was being high graded or not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll, I think we pretty much, Representative Hogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a quick question on the, I can find it. Page 2, line 13, on what thought processes went into coming up with returning the negotiation or the stumpage rates every 3 years, given the fact that wood prices are pretty volatile and generally spiraling upwards, is that good business, or how did that
Currently, under regulation, we require ourselves to reappraise timber every 3 years. Arguably, it could be longer period of time, or it could be a shorter period of time. Certainly, price swings tend to balance out over periods of time. And currently, we, in existing practice and regulation, we do reappraise sales after 3 years.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. I guess I'd just like to add, I mean, it is an effort to capture best value for the state, I mean, given the market conditions.
There's no other questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I do have copies of the testimony for both bills now, and I'll provide them to Jen. Thank you.
Next, we'll go on to the next panel, Northern Alaska Environmental Center panel. Would Again, I'd like to remind my panelists, if you have written testimony, to submit them to my aide, and to committee members that we will be completing the panel before we start asking questions.
Excuse me, I didn't realize it was my turn to go. My name's Roger Siglin. I live at 169.
Okay.
My name's Roger Siglin. I live at 169 Broad Pond Circle, Fairbanks. I'm currently retired. I've been living in the state going on 10 years now. I want to thank you all for the opportunity to speak today. And I'm not here to tell you how many trees should be cut every year off of this forest, or for what purpose. The claims and counterclaims by both sides of the issue would confuse even the wisest of individuals. The primary point I want to make today is that we don't trust you, our legislature, to represent the general public's interests, and with good reason. We have seen too many attempts to give our forest to industry on a silver platter. I might mention these are my personal views, not necessarily those of NAEC. And often the excuse given is to provide jobs. That's not a sound basis for forest management policy, the production of jobs. Jobs are necessary for a healthy economy, but they should be the result of sound ecological and economic decisions and not just another form of welfare. Now, a forest can provide many things, such as habitat for fish and wildlife, opportunities for recreation and subsistence activities, useful wood products, and last but not least, the scenic beauty that contributes immeasurably to the quality of life in interior Alaska. If jobs are provided in the process, that's an added benefit, but that should not be the rationale or the cause celebre for managing our forests. We need a process which ensures that our forest, the public's forest, provides all of its potential benefits, including wood products, in a reasonable mix. And on a worldwide basis, we constantly hear and see stories about the rape and ruin of forested lands. And closer to home in the Tongass, we can see how watersheds have been damaged by excessive road building and clear cutting of large tracts. Fish, wildlife, and other values have suffered greatly. And unfortunately, keeping some of these sawmills running has become the primary purpose of the forest. And I'm sure that was not the original intent. House Bill 344 may be a step in the right direction, but it still gives the forest industry too much in the way of guaranteed millions of board feet and other economic incentives. And the end result is it often costs the public to have its trees cut before we even consider the loss in forest values other than timber production. And I recognize it may be difficult to manage our forests properly and still compete economically in a world where politicians and industry too often conspire to make short-term profit the primary goal of forest management. But I refuse to believe we must do the same in the Tanana Valley. If you want to gain our trust, help us lead the way in establishing a model for management that respects all forest values and provides the owners of that forest, the public, and not the industry, a continuous role in management decisions. And if you don't do that, we'll continue to have the conflicts we see now which benefit no one on either side of the issue. I'd like to make one last point. It's been stated by one or more of our legislators that the best way to provide for our children is to provide jobs for their parents. And that's true in a very short-term and limited sense, but it's not true if the end result is the exhaustion of the Earth's resources, be it non-renewables such as fossil fuels and minerals, or the reduced capacity of the land to produce renewable resources. If we were truly concerned about our children's future and our grandchildren's future, We would use the Earth's resources as frugally and as efficiently as possible, instead of, as we too often see today, selling them off to balance the budget. And I know we're running late, so I think I'll cut my comments off there. Thank you very much for the opportunity to say my piece.
Next panelist.
My name is Lane Thompson. I'm a retired civil engineer. I've lived in the Fairbanks area most of the time since 1950. Excuse me a minute, I've got to rearrange these. I want to applaud the administration for bringing forth House Bill 344. I think it's an excellent idea, and it's going to provide the stimulus toward high value-added wood products. It's on one hand. On the other hand, I think that it's, I'd like to fault it for its failure to link large-scale logging allowed under its purview with the extensive logging permitted under other statutes. Sensible use in the Tanana Valley, I was speaking specifically of the Tanana Valley, now I'm not acquainted with its effect on Southeast. I think it's defective in three areas. The first is that providing a harvest of 50 million board feet, which is, say, in 10 years, which is 3,000 acres more or less in 10 years, and no restriction on the number of these, that if the price of wood does continue to climb, in fact, you could have 40 contracts, which would make some people very happy, but in fact, there's no restriction on the total amount of harvesting that's done. And in fact, until a inventory is made for the Tanana Valley, I think that prudence calls for some sort of limitation on the amount of harvesting that may be done. The second item is section 2E, which is along the same line, but it doesn't, unlike 2A, which specifies the board feet, in 2E there's the opportunity to say that the what is the relationship of this HB 344 to the total harvest in the valley. And again, an inventory is technically feasible at minimum cost, but it's been given very, very low priority by the Division of Forestry. And until it's forced to make an overall assessment, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. I think that this bill would be a great vehicle for getting that, so we know what our total cut is going to be. And third, despite what Tom Botan said, and I didn't catch all of his testimony there, it seemed to me that there is the potential for high grading. For example, if somebody could cut 2.5 million board feet a year of large white spruce and ship it overseas, then the other trees that they cut, it seems to me, and I may be incorrect in this, but it seems to me there's the potential for wasting it. And if you were to fly in a small plane over the cuts that are around Fairbanks, you'll see an enormous amount of wasted wood from forestry that's already gone here. It's wood that's just sitting there and rotting, and it's not being used for firewood or anything, it's just simply rotting. And I think we have to, that this should address that. But I'd like to make just a little further comment that I think that we have two visions of Alaska operating here. One is the one that was so eloquently addressed by Ralph Seekins, where he wants to, as I see it, turn the Tanana Valley into farms and industry. And in short, just like another Ohio. And that's a vision that's been around in America for 200 years or more, of converting the frontier into a little England. And from talking to Representative Bryce, who I share many visions with, I believe that he also shares this vision of Ralph Seekins to a large degree. I have a different vision, that this is the last chance here to do it right. That we have something here so special, so unique, that we must work very hard to keep a big chunk of where we live the way it is. And I would hope that when we're dealing with these bills, that we each think at least where our visions are going to lead before we make the final decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd step out, so I'm going to take over the room from there. Can you state your name for the record, please?
Again, my name is Dan Ritzman. I work at the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. Commercial logging is just one, and in Alaska, frequently not the most important economic one, of a large number of forest resources and uses. Fish, wildlife, water quality, scenic beauty, wilderness, subsistence, recreation, sport and commercial fishing, and tourism are all dependent on the state's forests and can be seriously damaged by large-scale unsustainable logging. All of these uses provide both non-economic and economic benefits that should not be threatened by focusing too heavily on a single, frequently incompatible use. Any logging that does occur on the state's public lands must be sustainable, not just in terms of timber as a commodity, but in terms of all these additional resources and uses as well. When logging is to occur on public lands, however, we agree with the premise of the proposed legislation that it makes no sense to export round logs and chips and consequently jobs out of the state. High value should be added to a substantial portion of any timber that is cut in order to create sustainable jobs for Alaskans. However, job creation at any cost is not acceptable. Sustained yield of all forest resources and uses is essential. Ensuring that sustained yields are maintained will require not only the possible impacts of individual logging sales be carefully evaluated, but the cumulative effects of logging on nearby private and other public lands also be fully analyzed. Recently, the Knowles-Ulmer administration prepared very eloquent testimony regarding legislation that would affect the Tongass National Forest of Southeast Alaska. This testimony contained four hallmarks which the administration stated should guide policies on the Tongass. These hallmarks can and should guide policy on all forests in the state. Adjusted to reflect a statewide perspective, the hallmarks which should guide our policies in connection with Alaska's forests include: 1, informed decision-making and prudent management of our resources through the use of sound science. 2, multiple balanced and sustainable use of forest-rich resources, including conservation measures that reflect our concern for future generations of people who will depend on these resources. 3, a planning process that is inclusive of the many and varied interests associated with the forest and is designed to foster consensus. And 4, maximum self-determination for the people of the region with respect to land management decisions which affect them, and a minimum of legislative prescriptions from Juneau. These are the hallmarks by which we should evaluate forest policies. The speakers before me on this panel asked much of the same. There are two areas where HB 344 clearly does not live up to the standards of these hallmarks. First, the volume figures will result in large-scale logging. These volumes on page 2, line 9. On a regional level, volume levels have a wide range of variability. For example, here in the interior, board feet per acre can vary from 3,000 to 12,000. A harvest of 5 million board feet could result in nearly 2,000 acres being cut under just one of these negotiated contracts. The current level of harvest in the interior off of state land is around 1,000 acres. One of these contracts could double the harvest level, and two of them could quadruple it. I've heard the state forester say a number of times that he does not believe the people of the interior have enough trust in the Division of Forestry to see a dramatic increase in cutting. And I think the state forester is right when he says that. To push this bill with a maximum cut of 5 million board feet goes against the four ideal hallmarks of good forest policy. A better approach might be a direct tie to individual stand characteristics such as species composition and average board feet per acre. Our bottom line is that contract volumes must be calculated on a site-specific basis to meet sustained yield requirements. The second area of conflict is with the contract length, page 2, lines 10 and 11. Last winter, two surveys were conducted by separate groups here in the interior. Both surveys concluded that the community would like to see increased timber harvesting to support jobs for Alaskans, so so HB 344 is on target here. The more detailed survey showed that the community is clearly opposed to long-term contracts, and 10 years is a long-term contract. I believe that the survey results showed that most of the community would be willing to support 3-year contracts. Additionally, contract renewals must be tied to objective performance reviews and standards and include provisions to tie stumpage fees to market price. Alaska is a big and diverse state. If we read and apply the four hallmarks, we will see that it is almost, if not entirely possible, impossible to pick one number as a standard for anything and apply it to the entire state in any regulation or legislation. If we do choose a number as a standard or a cutoff, we should be sure that we choose conservatively on the side of resource protection. For these reasons, we suggest a change in the wording regarding the percentage of trees used for local high value added wood products, page 2, line 21. More than 50% of the trees should remain in the state. We recommend language such as, the commissioner shall negotiate a percentage of the sale volume that is designated to high value added processing so that one, the percentage to high value added processing is at least 65%, and two, the maximum percentage feasible is dedicated to high value added products. A final change to the language of the bill suggested by the four hallmarks is an ideal forest policy is to add a subsection that requires the state to do a cumulative impact analysis on all other resources, uses, and interests before each sale is negotiated. This would include looking at other timber activities in the watershed on all land ownerships. Adding this type of language would make the program a model in forest resource planning. A final thought, and that is tied to the idea that this is here to create more jobs per board feet. I think I heard Deputy Commissioner Rutherford say that. And perhaps maybe an idea would be to not have the laundry list of what's high value added and what's low value added, but tie it directly into the worker hours per board feet that goes through a processing facility. And finally, I'd like to restate that we believe the answer to any problems with the management of our state forest land does not lie in special interest legislation from Juneau, but in broad-based community planning efforts. The Northern Center believes the impacted people of the region should have a major role in forest management decisions. Local residents are most directly affected by management decisions and must be fully involved in the formulation of legislation and agency policies which affect management and the use of the Tanana Valley State Forest or other forests in their area. We especially encourage collaborative efforts such as consensus building to bring different interests together to mutually resolve problems. We believe that effective public participation will ultimately lead to management decisions that are best for the forest and the wildlife, fish, and people that depend on the forest. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Yes, my name's Dave Lacey. I'm with Yukon River Tours, and we operate up on the Yukon River in the Yukon Flats, from the crossing into the Yukon Flats National Wildlife Refuge. We're a member of ARTA, and I'm here to present some comments on behalf of the Alaska Wilderness and Recreation Tourism Association. And this would be comments on HB 344. First, though, I would like to make a couple of comments on Mr. Seekin's presentation. One thing I noticed here in a Division of Labor publication that came out this spring is that 50% timber industry is the second highest without a state employment in this state, second only to the seafood industry, with over 50% of their jobs going to out-of-state workers. So a lot of these so-called jobs, we don't have the skills available here. These are out-of-state kind of welfare logger types that are coming up here. And he also kind of made laugh of joke of us people getting by on 100 days of work or whatever. Well, some of us do get by. We maybe get a little fish, maybe, you know, pick some berries, do whatever we can. We get by on that, but you know, you bring up all these other people out of here, and they're going to be competing for those resources and affecting us too, and slicing the pie a little bit thinner. In the tourism industry, we export wilderness. That's what we do, and it's becoming one of the most rarest commodities in the whole world, becoming more valuable all the time. It's impossible to predict the future value. Anyways, the Alaska Wilderness and Recreation Tourism Association is a 501c6 organization which represents tourism businesses which generally operate in public lands around the state. As a trade group that represents 225 business members, our mission is in part to become an integral partner in the economic and resource use decision-making process. We were not contacted by the facilitators of the business community leadership panel. However, we appreciate the opportunity to offer our comments under the auspices of the Northern Center for the Environment panel. Timber is neither the largest nor the only industry that depends on sustained access to Alaska's public land and forest resources. Both tourism and the sport commercial salmon fishing industries are larger than the timber industry, and they are every bit as forest-dependent as the timber industry. Tourism and other related industries have equal rights for equal access to Alaska's public forest. Research is needed to determine the economic value of an old-growth forest as it relates to non-consumptive industries and uses. For the tourists who visit and the local residents who depend on these areas for the successful operation of their businesses need a guaranteed long-term access to high-volume public forests. ARTA requests that in the future these facts will be recognized when forest policies are being developed. We encourage the state to include a long-term plan to sustain multiple use on Alaska's high-volume public forest. The real competition between forest user groups is over access to the high-volume public forest. They offer the most economic value to both consumptive and non-consumptive industries, and they are also the richest forest in terms of habitat and recreational potential. Just as some timber companies are asking for long-term contracts to assure them of a timber supply, the non-consumptive forest-dependent industries such as tourism also need assured long-term access to the high-volume forests on public lands. All forest users theoretically have equal rights for equal access to public forests. However, after a clear cut, the forest-dependent qualities on which tourism and other non-consumptive forest users depends are irreversibly destroyed for at least one generation and are undermined for several more generations. In evaluating competing uses, forest management plans should compare the economic and non-economic costs and benefits between the time of harvest and the rotation age of the timber and extend this comparison to the time of old growth regeneration. The next time you go to Sitka, you can see an easily accessible example of this problem. Try hiking through the old growth forest at Staragavin Beach, just north of town. The old growth forest is beautiful, open, easy to walk through, and deer sign is everywhere. Then try walking through the clear cut at the shooting ranges up the valley. It was harvested in the mid-60s, and even after 30 years of regrowth, it consists of a nearly impenetrable thicket. The new spruce are about 6 feet tall. It takes half an hour to struggle through a few hundred yards of this thicket. There is no deer sign except along the edges of the clear cut. As the harvest rotation advances, the high-volume timber suitable for recreation and tourism disappears until there is a proactive plan to protect them. The value-added timber bill needs to incorporate a plan to allocate the high-volume forest between various forest users and protect the high-volume forest used by non-consumptive industries. For the forest qualities needing protection, the state has spent large sums of money on forest inventories that quantify stands valuable to the timber industry. Extensive research is likewise necessary to identify areas with economic potential for tourism and other non-consumptive forest-dependent industries. The value-added timber bill needs to include provisions to conduct this research. Public forests are an integral part of the Alaskan mystique, which visitors come here to experience. The following list identifies forest qualities that need to be identified and protected. A. Road, aerial, and river coastal view sheds. Many ARTA members operate flight seeing, river running, and turboard businesses. Aerial view sheds with a high potential tourism value need to be identified and protected near communities with airstrips and cities with airports. View sheds from the road system, rivers, and coastal areas form an integral part of nearly every visitor's enjoyment/perception of Alaska and also require protection. Areas valued for their remote qualities. Many of our members operate lodges and camps on remote property. Their location is a marketing tool for their business. Since logging roads would be unacceptable to their businesses and lifestyles, many areas are not acceptable by road need to be protected. Many areas not acceptable by road. High use areas, C. In 1985, recreation and tourism activities accounted for 5.7 million user days in the Tanana Basin. About one-third of the average visitor's stay was spent on activities associated with state land. Residents of the Tanana Valley listed outdoor recreation as the second most frequently stated reason for moving to the Tanana Basin and why they stay. 1987 Tanana Valley State Forest Resource Analysis, DNR. Areas with a high potential for tourism and recreational usage need to be identified and protected. D. areas where the standing forest has a higher economic value than timber. Our business members operate in the Tanana Valley. They generate a substantial amount of revenue by attracting visitors who spend money in the state, employing local residents, and supporting other recreationally dependent businesses. When these dollars add up, they exceed the revenue generated by the timber industry. B. Forests that may appear appropriate for salvage sales. Where beetle-killed forests are being managed for recreation, tourism, and habitat, clear-cutting will delay the restoration of forest-dependent activities by 30 to 50 years. The living trees in these forests should be protected from clear-cut logging. The Alaska Wilderness and Recreation Tourism Association believes that Alaska's public forests should be managed for the long-term sustainability and benefit for all Alaskans. Forest management plans should acknowledge that Alaska's forest-related commercials / subsistence economies, recreational activities, and lifestyles depend on healthy forest ecosystems. The timber industry's methodology for harvesting forests typically precludes any other use of the forest. Large-scale and long-term timber harvest plans represent many threats to our members' businesses and lifestyles. Research is needed to determine the economic potential of an old-growth forest as it relates to non-consumptive industries and uses, and this documentation should be compared with the harvest management plans to determine public policy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll start with any questions or comments. Representative Bryce.
No, I've done enough. I appreciate the testimony that you provided, but it hasn't been very clear whether the Environmental Center is saying we support 344, we don't support 344. Do you consider HB 344 a special interest legislation?
We support the premise of the proposed legislation that if trees are to be harvested, they should, the jobs and the trees should stay in the state.
But you don't have specific recommendations for, I mean, they were very clear and precise in 212.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you were going to be as precise with 344.
Well, I think I highlighted at least four specific changes.
Okay.
to the volume figures, to
yeah.
to the contract length,
yeah. Okay.
And to the percentage.
Okay.
Could I add a comment? Whether or not I'm on the board of directors for NAEC, and whether I'm speaking for NAEC or not, I'm not sure. But I, at least from my viewpoint, I think the legislature's approach to the issue is basically wrong. I think that the public should be deciding, the community should be deciding how this forest should be managed, not legislators responding to one pressure group or another, and that pressure group may be the environmentalists as well as industry.
Well, this is the governor's
bill.
Okay, well, I'll put the blame on the governor then. But
so you think that it's inappropriate for the administration?
I think we need a process which involves the public in a more meaningful way on how we manage our forests on a day-to-day or a year-to-year basis. I think that's the only way to achieve some consensus, recognizing how difficult that can be.
Yeah.
I find it ironic that I sit here defending the forest because I don't particularly care for forests. But what I don't like is a process wherein people who do care for it are too often left out of the process.
We have right now Ellen, Representative Westman, Representative Logan, Representative Davies, Representative Logan. In the interest of time, let me give you guys a little background on time right now. We thought we were going to get out of here early. I don't think we are. We have an hour and a half right now of other panels. I would ask the committee members to try to keep the question and the panel members to try to keep the answers precise. Representative Osterman.
Mr. Siegel, I appreciate where you're coming from. I do want to know, though, your ideas on if this is not a public forum, that we're just not against public input. Which system would you prefer that the legislature or the governor or whoever does to try to get input on ideas on how to manage the forum?
I sometimes think, and I'm sure there's flaws with this idea as there is with any, but I sometimes think a better approach to managing the public's forest would be to try to achieve a consensus on a zoning system, so to speak, that these are areas which we will set aside for intensive, long-term timber production. We have other areas here which we will set aside primarily for other reasons rather than make every acre opening.
I might ask the people that are on teleconference, if they can't hear, please let us know. And we'll do what we can to work to hear any better communication. In the interest of time, I would like to ask the committee members if we could hold off our questions until everyone in the panel has made their comments. And we'll go into questions and answers. This isn't working?
No. I think they turned off.
Harry, that was for you. Hold on to your questions.
Is this a little better?
Harry.
In the interest of time, I will state again that I'll ask the committee members if we can wait till everyone on the panel has made their presentations and then go into the question and answer or comments. With that, we'll start with our business community leadership. Dillman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ron Ricketts, and I'm with Fairbanks Industrial Development Corporation. On my immediate right is Dr. Jim Drew, who is a recently retired department head at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and also a member of the Chamber of Commerce. And then on his right is Ralph Seekins, who is a board member at the Chamber of Commerce and owns Seekins Ford Lincoln Mercury. I apologize, but Bill Allen, the president or the chair of the chamber, planned to be here, but he had a meeting that conflicted, and so he was unable to stay. He'll be back for the hearing on 344. Because Mr. Allen is not here, he asked me to read into the record a resolution that was passed yesterday by the board of directors of the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, which with your permission I will now do, and I'll provide a copy of the file. This is a resolution of the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce supporting House Bill 212. Whereas a bill is pending before the legislature which would reduce the bureaucratic processes required for small loggers and small mill owners to obtain timber, and whereas the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, by and through its duly elected board of directors, finds that this legislation is important and necessary to support and stimulate the local small forest products industry, now therefore be it resolved that the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce supports House Bill 212. And that's the extent of the resolution. So it's very short and to the point. With that, I would like to turn the mic over to, and I'll come back later to wrap up, but I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Drew, who will speak.
So my name is James V. Drew, and I live at 4725 Villanova Drive in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm very pleased to be able to have the opportunity to visit with you today about some of the aspects of House Bill 212. and I'd like to follow up basically in recommending passage of House Bill 212 by the Alaska State Legislature and emphasize some of the specific points that were done in the resolution that Mr. Ricketts just read from the chamber itself. In developing the reasons for favoring 212, I'd also like to suggest one change that I believe would improve the legislation from the standpoint of the business community. Currently, sales of state-owned timber are often delayed by excessive time-consuming and costly procedures required by legislation. These delays have a negative impact on the business aspects of operations conducted by small loggers and small mill operators in Alaska. Specifically, they enhance the cost of doing business and make it difficult for locally produced wood products to compete with similar products shipped in from elsewhere. House Bill 212 is designed to remedy this deficiency. The harvest of state-owned timber is a resource development activity that provides both economic and societal benefits in Alaska. Timber harvest provides jobs and income for people and creates new wealth for communities. Moreover, through the creation of personal income, it provides a source of potential revenue for local governments to use in paying for services such as education, police and fire protection, health care, transportation systems, and the management of recreational lands. Today, local governments in Alaska are becoming increasingly concerned about the sources of revenue to meet these basic community needs. House Bill 212 clearly defines the primary purpose of state forests in Alaska as areas of multiple use management, emphasizing the production, utilization, and replacement and replenishment of timber resources while perpetuating personal, commercial, and other beneficial uses of the resources. In addition, it requires that forest land use plans consider the use of silvicultural practices, commercial timber harvest, and related activities to maintain and enhance the quality and quantity of wildlife habitat. These mutually beneficial management practices are particularly important as forest land managers work toward meeting the challenge of reversing the deterioration of forest health in Alaska. Operators of small, local timber harvesting businesses in Alaska need reliable and timely access to timber resources on state land if they are to operate successfully in a competitive market economy. With 11 million acres of state land classified for parks and recreation in Alaska, it is entirely reasonable to designate less than 2 million acres in the Tananaw Valley State Forest, for example, for multiple-use management, emphasizing the production, utilization, and replenishment of timber resources. House Bill 212 will reduce the government procedures necessary to provide needed access to the forest resources for the production of wood products in Alaska. In line with the need to reduce time-consuming and costly procedures, I wish to suggest one modification in Section 38.05.113 of House Bill 212. With respect to five-year timber sale schedules, this section now says the timber schedule must provide a timeline that identifies timber sales, their amounts, and their locations, and must be sufficient to provide the public and the forest products industry with a basis to comment on future sale offerings. I recommend deletion of the words must be sufficient to. In the absence of a clear definition of sufficient, then endless debate on what is sufficient could lead to continuing delays, legal challenges, and increased costs to the state to administer timber sales. Lastly, the harvest of renewable timber resources on a sustained yield basis also maintains forest values desired by non-consumptive users. I have personally observed forest industries in other northern countries where good silviculture is practiced, and these industries are far more extensive than the timber industries that now exist in Alaska. These same countries, however, also enjoy the advantages of much larger outdoor recreation and tourism industries that are currently part of Alaska's economy. Just a couple years ago, I had an opportunity to review some of the information in connection with the International Forestry Research Meeting in Finland. And the program dealt with various silvicultural practices and forest management issues. But it was interesting to me to note that while the program dealt with an enormous number of innovative silvicultural and management practices within that country and indicated the extensiveness of their timber reforestation and timber management and timber harvesting industry, at the same time, I received a brochure from Finnair indicating that they were soliciting people to come to Alaska as tourists because the beauty of the countryside was something that they wanted everyone to have an opportunity to see. In other words, good management and good silviculture and good forest regeneration does not have to conflict with the kind of values that we need in using our outdoor areas for recreation and tourism. In summary, I strongly endorse the resolution supporting House Bill 212 that was passed by the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go on to the next panelist.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ralph Seekins, 1625 Old Steese Highway in Fairbanks. I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. I'm also involved in businesses here in Fairbanks, in Soldotna, and in the tourism industry through owner of a budget rent-a-car in Anchorage. So my involvement here primarily today is not as a business person, but as an Alaskan and as a father of four children who I'd like to have jobs someday. And I think my neighbors have pretty much the same objective for their children. They'd like them to be able to have jobs here so they don't have to move away. Basically, I would put it this way. People need things. And things are made of stuff. And stuff comes out of the ground. Industry gets the stuff out of the ground and turns it into things. Then people can use the things. Animal, vegetable, mineral. The things we need to live are made of stuff that comes out of the ground one way or the other. How we use the stuff that comes out of the ground as humans is what we're talking about here today. Can we have the best of both worlds? I think we can. We can provide jobs for the people of the state of Alaska and preserve what we all treasure so highly here in the first place. Jobs were the foundation of America's wealth. The economic woes that are facing the nation today, things like the eroding work ethic, the vanishing middle class, wage cuts, bureaucratic quagmires, trade deficits, interest rates, make work jobs, taxation, problems of the service industry, all those things have come about, I think, because we've lost high quality jobs in the United States. Alaska is beginning to feel that same effect. There are less jobs in the oil industry than there were a year ago or 5 years ago. There are part-time jobs that we can find for people in Alaska today versus full-time jobs. We find many people working two or three part-time jobs. There's a 100-day or 110-day tourist season out of a 365-day year, which isn't bad if you're a college student living at home. You can get a summer job in the tourism industry. We crank up for the tourism industry at budget. We have more than twice the number of cars for that 110-day period that we would the rest of the year. But a person can't live on that job. They can't provide food and clothing for their families, a place to live for their families with 100 days a year employment. Our leaders, our state, I think, needs a vision. What we can do with our natural resources. In the Bible, it says that without a vision, the people perish. But at the same time in the Bible, there's a story about Joseph when he was going to see his brothers, and his father had sent him there with the coat of many colors. And his brothers saw him coming from a long ways away, and they said, "Hey, look, here comes that dreamer. Let's kill him and see what happens to his dream then." And you, as our legislators, need to inspire us with a vision of what we can do with our natural resources, but there will be those that, as soon as you express a dream and a vision, will try to kill you to see what happens to your dream then. And you're going to be called on to make decisions that sometimes are going to favor one side of the issue or the other. But that's what I think you're here to do. And I think that's why you ran for office, was somehow to make some of these hard decisions. Here in Alaska, we can have the best of both worlds, I believe. We can provide jobs in a planned, orderly growth and development situation. Governor Hinkle one time said, "A man without a job lives in an ugly environment." And I agree with that statement. The man without a job is the one who wonders who has time to protest over the spotted owl wetlands or to protest against this or that. And he wonders why there's anyone who cares more for obscure plants and animals than for people and jobs. The man who answers when asked, "What's the latest on the economy?" says, "Well, there seems to be a light at the end of the cliff." There's no hope for a man without a job. And it really dehumanizes us. Our goal at the Chamber of Commerce, I believe, is through orderly, planned growth and development to provide jobs for Alaskans, for my kids, and for yours, and for our neighbors' kids. Others would trash any move to provide any basic industry, including forestry in the state of Alaska, to trash the economy program by program, by job-killing program. I don't think that's what you're here to do. You're here to make an economic decision. Economics is about the allocation of scarce resources to individual wants. And I think it's about putting trees in a nature preserve rather than allowing foresters to convert them into products. It's about banning exploration for oil and gas rather than using it to heat homes and to run automobiles. It's about expanding national parks by demolishing homes and businesses of inholders. The decision you're making here in this kind of bill, with this kind of bill, is an economic decision. It's about whether or not we provide jobs for Alaska. Now, I understand there are jobs that you can get in the tourism industry. I think I already addressed that a little bit. I don't want to be a $100 to $110 a year employee, and I don't think you would like to do that, or that you would not have other Alaskans do that. Every place people want to make a living isn't the habitat of the last big old tree, or the last cute little animal, or the last ugly bug. There is room for development and for forestry in this great land of ours. Much of it, as you already know, has already been set aside by the federal government. What's left is what we have to produce our economy, and we must do that wisely. Even the village idiot realizes that nearly all human activities affect the environment. But we have a right to be here. And we have the brains and the goodwill to treat nature with human dignity, even if that's somewhat short of perfection. We cannot reach perfection. Any human activities are short of that. But we can do the best that we can. Regardless of the good intentions of those who oppose forestry in Alaska, the net effect is to hurt people. That's my opinion. Why, to hear people say, "Well, we can increase more tourism jobs by not harvesting this timber." These are the same people that, when we ask for more roads, they say no. More airports, they say no. More hotels, they say no. More access, they say no. No tourists allowed in their private preserves. They want a tourist industry that sticks to the already paved roads. And I don't think you're going to enhance the tourism industry by harvesting trees that cannot be seen from the paved highways that they want to restrict people to. Tourism is a tourism dependent economy means also an easy target for those people who would boycott it if it doesn't meet with their expectations. I think if you take a look at what the foresters have to comply with today to do their job, the plethora of federal and state regulations, that there's already enough burden on people to make sure that we're doing it right. You have to make a decision. Where do you stand on jobs for Alaskans? Will you create more hoops? Or will you encourage planned, orderly growth and development of the resources which we have in this state? My desire for you, my hope for you, is that we will be able to support, or that you will support and pass House Bill 212. I think that will be good for Alaskans, it will be good for jobs, and it will be a step forward in providing for the future of our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
I just have a couple of points to wind this thing up. It was suggested this morning that we have a choice between jobs and revenue production, that we perhaps can't have both in our state. I disagree with that, and the reason that I do is because, let me point to an example, I guess. It's the salvage logging bill that the legislature passed and the governor signed into law this last session and was funded by the governor's budget. In the supporting documentation for that bill, the Division of Forestry indicated that that there would be a net return of several hundred thousand dollars to the state as a result of selling this timber, and that quite a few jobs would be provided by this activity. While it's a little bit early in the process, I'm sure that's true. And so we can have both jobs, and we can have revenue to the state in a very carefully planned operation, such as that which would be provided by House Bill 212. Another point, and I think I was going to talk about a couple other things, but Ralph kind of upstaged me a little bit, but that's okay. And that is that, you know, you heard Bob Zackel say this morning, or explain this morning, the problems that he's had in getting timber. And it's that kind of a bill or that kind of an operation that this bill is designed to support. And I think that if you look at it from the standpoint of people like Bob Zackel and Al Pegg, you will support this bill. I just have to believe that it's in the best interest of the state as well as the forest products industry. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from any of the
Thank you. I do have two questions. Thank you very much for your presentation. Mr. Ricketts, you talk about House Bill 212 as the means for helping the Fairbanks Greater Chamber of Commerce and the businesses here. There were some recommended changes by the administration. Have you had time to review some of the recommended changes?
Only in part. In fact, I'm not sure I got them all. I can't really comment on them if that's your question at this point, but certainly I will be able to.
Okay. One was on the available data, the best available data, how you feel about it, and the other one was changing the board feed salvage sales of dead or down timber to acreage? That was the other question. And because this is Representative James and Representative Bryce's bill, and also deleting on page 4, sections 2 and 4 of the bill. And those would be my questions to you. And to Mr. Drew, I have a question on your specific amendment to delete must be sufficient. Could you explain your reasoning for the deletion of those words?
Yes, it seemed to me in reading this that if we read the sentence like this, the timber schedule must provide a timeline that identifies timber sales, their amounts, and their locations, to provide the public and forest industry with a basis to comment on future sale offerings. In other words, that really says the same thing, but when we put in the phrase, and must be sufficient, who will determine what is sufficient?
Thank you very much.
Representative Nicolai.
Yes, I have a question for Ralph Seekins. I wasn't sure if I heard you right, but it seemed to me that you said village idiot.
Well, I was using a quote from a book that was called, from Ron Arnold's book, and it was talking about the proverbial village idiot. You know, I think it's a medieval term having to do with there was always the so-called village idiot that really wasn't too smart. I mean, it wasn't too dumb. He was pretty generally pretty smart. Had nothing to do with any town, community, city.
Okay.
Had nothing to do with anything.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. I would comment, if I could, McLean, about one thing about, you said that the administration wanted to determine, well, delete which ones? B, 2, and 4, was that it, on page 4?
Yes, on page 4, it's to delete subsection B, 2, and 4. But number 4 was opposed by Tanana Chiefs Conference at their initial review. So
okay.
I'd like to know...
If I were to take a look at that in the context, and correct me if I'm wrong, of the state constitution and current law, that would comply with the state constitution as far as I understand sustained yield principle of the constitution, and also with current law on wildlife management with SB 77 that passed, not this last session, but the session prior. So I think that those two sections would probably be in compliance with both the Constitution and current state law, so I would prefer to see them still in there.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Seeger.
Just as a general comment,
yes,
Chairman, I believe Section 8 of the bill, the administration recommended entire deletion of that section, not just 2 and 4, I believe 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Thank you, Representative Codd. Representative Ostrom?
Dr. Drew answered my questions.
Are there any more questions or comments? Thank you, gentlemen. Next on the agenda is the governor's bill. House Bill 344, Value-Added Timber Contracts, and I think Marty Rutherford, Deputy Commissioner of DNR, is going to presentation.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask the government group to come up at the same time, because one will spill over into another.
Please do.
Thank you. For the record, I am Marty Rutherford, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I have with me Carl Oles, who is the Lead Resources Economic Development Specialist for Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and Tom Boutin, State Forester within the Department of Natural Resources. Janet Kowalski, the Director of Habitat for Alaska Department of Fish and Game, was going to be here today and got held up in Juneau, and she sends her apologies. As I said earlier, it is a pleasure to be here today. I'd like to note that the testimony I'm providing is a coordinated administration position, but we're all available to answer, to have some discussion, some dialogue about the bill. Am I not on? Oh, I need to be closer? Thank you.
Override the...
Thank you. I will try. The governor introduced this legislation in response to concerns of members of the timber industry that we better utilize the timber that is cut in Alaska. In particular, Steve Seeley from Seaborn Lumber in Ketchikan had brought to our attention that we should find ways to encourage value-added processing so that the forest products industry in Alaska could grow. The premise of the legislation is that the forest products industry be provided the tools to create more jobs in Alaska per board feet of timber harvested, while at the same time minimizing impacts to fish and wildlife. We have seen figures that would lead us to believe that with certain types of value-added processing, we could see as many as four times the number of jobs from high value-added processing versus the export of timber. The point we'd like to make is that if we can just double the number of jobs in Alaska's forest products industry, it will be a significant achievement to the Alaskan economy. I'd like to reference a comment made by Bob Zackel earlier in the day, just to reiterate it, emphasize it. He says that in one day in the woods, during which he cuts about 1,000 board feet, equals 5 days in the mill, which equals 21 days in the cabinet shop. And I understand he owns and operates the Alaska Birch Works here in Fairbanks. And I think that that capsulizes what we're discussing. We're talking about trying to find ways to utilize our timber to create more jobs. Before introducing this legislation, we received comments from the timber industry, other state and federal agencies, and the environmental community. Although we've not addressed every concern, we've gone to a great deal of effort to find the balance between all of these interests. House Bill 344 is not an end product. This represents our best response to what we think we heard from the many constituents who want better utilization of state timber. We want to see this issue on the table and a good discussion to occur about the goals of the legislation. The bill provides incentives to the timber industry. It's not a mandate to eliminate log exports or change the forest products industry. We do not want to ban export, nor do we want to require value-added processing. Rather, we want to help make it more economic to do in-state processing of our timber rather than exporting it to Japan or the Pacific Northwest. This is simply a tool, a way to encourage high value-added processing. Under the bill, timber sales can be negotiated rather than going through a competitive bid process. The Commissioner of Department of Natural Resources could contract with the private entities to supply timber to help them get started in a high value-added processing business. This could result in more jobs per board foot, as I've indicated earlier. The size of the sales are relatively small, but result in the employment of more Alaskans. Specifically, the legislation provides the following. It gives the DNR commissioner the ability to enter into long-term contracts of no greater than 5 million board feet and no longer than 10 years for companies that guarantee that no less than 50% of that timber will be used for high value-added wood products. I might add that we don't intend that the 5 million board feet per year is enough to supply all the wood need of some types of value-added processing. However, a company that has a certainty of supply for a substantial part of its needs are in very good position to compete on the open market for timber sold by private and public timber owners. Very few wood users receive all of their supply from one source. Again, I might reiterate, one of the things we've heard is certainty is another major issue for anyone interested in going into some kind of a high value-added processing plant. The bill also establishes the Alaska Wood Products Research and Marketing Program within the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, much like ASME, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. And it defines high value-added wood products as plywood, kiln-dried lumber, interior finish, paneling and trim, flooring, doors and window cabinets, doors and windows, cabinets, furniture, musical instruments, and other similar finished wood products. And that is to be specified by the commissioner in regulation. I might note that within the definition of high value added wood products, we made special provision for interior timber. Al Pegg and a number of other people who have a great deal of experience in the interior woods have told us that in order to have a healthy forest and a healthy forest industry, we need to have a market for the hardwood. DNR foresters agree. While much of it is second growth, the hardwood is overmature, as Tom Boutin discussed earlier today, and consequently it has low overall economic value. The only known use for that resource is in the manufacture of plywood substitutes, such as materials used for sheathing and underlayment, commonly called wafer board and oriented strand board. While not commonly considered a high value added wood product, that product is the highest value for the resource we have in the interior. Also, the manufacture of plywood substitutes usually includes the use of recycled wood, which offers benefits to the community. And using the hardwood is very compatible with wildlife management and provides access to firewood and higher value spruce for a variety of users. In closing, I'd like to reiterate that this bill represents what the Knowles administration is hearing about the use of state timber, but we recognize this is the beginning of a process. We really appreciate your having the hearing today, and we look forward to participating in that process. And at that point in time, I'll open it up for any questions to all of us. And maybe there's something Tom Boutin or Carl Oles would like to add.
Representative Klein.
Thank you. I do have questions on the second, the page 4 of section lines 20 through following to page 5, it seems as if, with all due respect to the governor, it seems as if this is not a complete bill. And the reason I say this is that if it's going to be like Alaska Seafood Marketing Program, then they have a board. There is a board made up consisting of members that deal with Alaska Seafood Marketing. But here, it's just a program coordinator. And so could you clarify that point? How would it be addressed? What would the process be?
I guess I'll open it up for comments by Tom or Carl too, but my thought was that they would look to the Board of Forestry and to the state forest management plans that exist. Is there anything you'd like to add beyond that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, for the record, Carl Olds with the Department of Commerce.
Yeah.
What this is an effort to try and assist this program within the resources that are available. There is a timber position in the Department of Commerce that is unfilled right now, and we would like that person to coordinate the value-added production or work on the value-added program. And then to work with the existing groups in the industry, private trade associations, and just within that modest means, do what we can to promote value-added production.
Thank you very much.
May I add, I mean, there really is an effort to try to be cognizant of the budget limitations that exist, so that's a reflection. It is a modest effort. I think that was a good word, Carl.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Representative Hogan?
Chairman, as I stated here earlier, I'll turn on my mics here. I am in the wood product business, being a cabinet maker, and I'm very interested in this bill. Fairly supportive of the majority of the concepts here. I was curious why plywood and fiberboard were left out of or were excluded from value added. It seems to me that's fairly significant value added product finished. Product. I know there was some talks about an MDF plant, medium density fiberboard, which is commonly used in a lot of, I can't think of how many boards of those things I've got up. In Sitka at one point, when the mills closed down there, and maybe you could answer that question.
I'm going to turn it to Tom first.
Yeah, for the record, Tom Boutin, DNR State Forester. Representative Hogan, Mr. Chairman, the one place where the state does have a resource, and of course this is talking solely about state timber, not private timber or timber of any other ownership, the one place where the state does have a significant resource that would lend itself to that kind of product, whether it be called MDF or wafer board or oriented strand board or whatever process and end product the name has, is up in the interior, and up here the what we have for that is low value hardwood as opposed to softwood such as might be on federal land in southeast. The state just doesn't have that kind of resource. So in the interior where we do have that kind of resource, as I read on page 4, beginning in line 7, on that paragraph on products, this would allow the use of that interior hardwood for paneled products, which would...
Line 11 and 12, specifically.
That's our intention, at least. This is the beginning of a process rather than the end of a process. So if wording, no doubt wording will be offered to change and amendments will be offered and whatnot. But the intent was to meet the resource that the state does have. And I think it was directly at what you were asking about.
If you look on line 14 or start at 13, except as otherwise provided in the subsection, now high value added wood product does not include plywood, and it says pulp, chips, wafer board, chipboard, fiberboard, green lumber, it goes on. But I guess just knowing what the market is for, personally, having personal experience knowing what the market is for medium density fiberboard, most my vendors on allocation for the stuff, there's just not enough fiber in the Northwest right now to produce some of these products, and I don't know if there'd be enough, market feasibility to get an MDF plant going somewhere in the state and ship it out of state, but I was just curious why plywood and fiberboard. I can understand pulp and chips and a few other things maybe not being included. Why some of these finished products are excluded?
The intention is for end products such as you produce, cabinets. However, for the specific situation of the low-value hardwood that the state has, the wording on beginning on lines 11 and 12 do allow the use of that resource that the state has for just the kind of products you're talking about. In other parts of the state just doesn't have a resource, that kind of resource, and normally green lumber, even plywood and chips, and wafer board, chipboard are commodity products, and with the exception of the low-value hardwood resource that the state has in the interior, the bill is aimed at the higher jobs per 1,000 board feet than what you might find with a commodity product.
Any other questions, Representative Davies and then Price?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marty, just a comment on page 2, line 21, where there's the about 50% local usage for high value added. I don't have any particular number here in mind, but in listening and having gone out and talked to Bob Zackle on his mill site, it looks to me like that might be a overly restrictive number. And it might, in fact, be, I don't even want to think about this, but it might, in fact, be better to state it the other way around, that no more than 50% can be used outside of the state or something like that. For example, and I know that in some of Bob Zackle's operations, he could only use a very, maybe 10 or 20% in his mill, the remainder he sold for firewood or other kinds of things. Firewood doesn't classify as, in this terms, as value-added product, but it's used locally. So I think that we might want to come look at some of those concerns, how an operation like
angles would fit into that definition.
Tom, do you need to want to add anything?
We should look at that.
Yeah. It is something we've heard from other parties as well, and it is something we expect fully to discuss. I might add here that the Board of Forestry has kindly agreed to act as a forum for further discussion on this bill for us during the remainder of the interim. So we expect to be holding some hearings, and I don't know if they're going to do that through a subcommittee. I'm not sure what the process is going to be yet, but they just agreed to do that yesterday. So we have heard this from other parties. I hadn't heard the idea of stating it just in the converse, as you indicated, but that brings us some interesting questions, so thank you.
Representative Price.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe outside of the Panama Valley Forest or the interior forest here, when we're talking about things quite associated with Representative Davies' remarks, I believe, is I have a concern about high grading out of a forest and what that will do to the health of that forest if we just leave species that are, shall we say, less hardy or less desirable in that area. It's my understanding is that it would be natural for those least desirable species to take over what had been cut out. Is that?
I'm going to let Tom answer that.
Well, subject to recommendations for change of what we find on the site, often received from Alaska Department of Fish and Game for wildlife objectives, we do reforest exactly what we find there. That is, we use native species, and if we're in a white spruce stand, we reforest. I'll go on. Perhaps I won't.
Support deferred maintenance for the university.
This is not a test. This is an actual emergency.
But we do reforest, for instance, white spruce stands with white spruce, and we allow natural regeneration for hardwood. So I don't think we'd be in danger of replacing one forest with a lower value forest high grading, because we are required under law to do reforestation.